From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 1 year ago tomorrow, with a nation still reeling from the shock of 9/11, Saturday Night Live executive producer Lorne Michaels opened the late-night comedy show with then-New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and asked the question every comic needed to have answered.
Saturday Night Live is one of our great New York City institutions, and that's why it's important for you to do your show tonight.
Can we be funny?
Why start now?
It turns out that we could be funny again, and bit by bit we were. News of the death of irony was premature. Laughter came back. 1 year later, humor laced around Osama bin Laden, racial profiling, and ethnic unease is all over the comedy circuit, and nowhere more than among Arab and Muslim comedians doing stand-up across the country. With an unprecedented national focus on Middle Eastern culture and Islam, these comedians are using jokes about burqas, the Taliban, and upside-down airport searches as a way to ease tension, to build bridges, and to deflate stereotypes. Tonight, we're handing our microphone to Arab and Muslim stand-up comics for the laugh and for the insight. Are you ready for this? Do you need it? Are these comedians breaking the same boundaries that Richard Pryor, Alan King, John Leguizamo, and Margaret Cho did for their ethnic slices of America? Are you ready for comedy to reveal our shared humanity? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Chicago is Ray Hanania, author and columnist for the Creator Syndicate Papers, who turned to stand-up comedy after September 11th as a way to clear the air, to build a bridge, to make us laugh. Good evening and welcome, Ray Hanania.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
It's great. I'm great, and it's great to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Ray, take my wives, please.
Okay. Bada boom, bada bing, off we go. Ray, you are Palestinian-American.
Yes.
And you're Chicagoan.
Yep.
And
I don't know which is worse. But...
Well, we'll suspend judgment on that. How's it been to be Palestinian American and Chicagoan in the last year, comedian?
Well, you know, after September 11th, things really got kind of tough. Although I think it's always been rough being Arab American. I was born in this country, so life's been a lot easier for me, I think. But after September 11th, it was very difficult to reason with people, and I thought, you know, there's got to be a better way than just arguing Middle East politics with people who normally or otherwise would be normal people.
But right now are all wound up so tight it's hard to even have a decent argument. Did you find the other way, Ray?
Absolutely, and I realized that in a conversation I had with some friends who were going, why did they do this? Why did your people? And I go, geez, what do you mean my people? And I found myself kind of reverting to comedy as kind of a self-defense mechanism.
But you know, are people ready for it? Does it work? Have you found the magic words that make them laugh and see through the haze?
Well, the act is doing very well. And, you know, the truth is that comedy is about our fears. You know, we lampoon our fears, and that's a way to kind of bring them down. So in a way, this is just the way everybody else got into comedy, I think.
So help us up onto the comedy rail here. What's working? What routine have you got going, Ray Hanania, that's making them laugh, making them see something?
Well, my name's Ray Hanania. I'm from the Middle East. I surrender. Actually, I'm Palestinian-Arab, and really all that means is I really don't look at you as an audience. I like to think of you all as potential hostages. Now, they usually go berserk after those lines. They really start laughing because it's basic humor. I don't get up there and I don't do a lot of political, oh, the Israelis are bad and the Palestinians are good stuff. That's not what the comedy is about. It's about basic things.
But you're diving right into terrorism there already. The hostage word is right up there already.
I'm touching on things that you have to speak to the audience at the level that they understand issues. I mean, today I think 2 years ago, if I tried to do a joke about a burqa, there might be some problems. But today, everybody knows what a burqa is.
So it's expanded your opportunities, your range.
Well, I tell you what, I would have preferred it the other way, where I could do serious stuff. This is comedy under fire. And no pun intended, but I'll tell you what, it can be pretty rough. But most people who go to comedy clubs are going there because they want to see someone make fun of the things around them that they see every day. And what do we see every day? Arabs, terrorism, violence in the Middle East, issues about, you know, who we are, where we're from, why do they hate us. So So I think it's a perfect and natural way to go.
So how far can you push it, Ray? I mean, you know, these are tricky subjects. Hostage is funny for a minute, and then in another way it's not funny. Osama bin Laden, well, funny, but then, you know, scary too.
Yeah.
To take us out to the boundary lands, what's out there on the humor far-flung field?
Well, that's as far as I go with some of those jokes, but... I do explain, you know, I talk about my own experiences being Arab American. I mean, I knew I was different going to school, for example. All my friends had these lunch boxes. They had pictures of Superman and Batman on their lunch boxes. I had a picture of Yasser Arafat with a beard holding a Kalashnikov over his head. I'd walk into school, all the kids would hit the ground, scared, wondering who the heck I am. And then we'd get into the cafeteria. They'd open their lunch boxes. They'd have these neatly wrapped bologna sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly. I'd open up my lunchbox, and I had lamb and rice, stuffed grape leaves, stuffed fattoush, stuffed green peppers, tabbouleh, hummus, and baba ganoush. Can you imagine what that smelled like 3 hours later in school? No wonder I had no friends. And That's the kind of humor I use, the violence that we see around us, to allow me to do today that works, whereas 2 years ago, making jokes about being Arab American, yeah, nobody really would have cared.
There was no traction for it.
No.
I can well imagine that around Chicagoland and beyond, you can pretty well knock them dead, with this stuff. What about...
Well, the worst thing, I'll tell you what I won't do. I won't be sitting in a restaurant talking about how I killed the audience last night, but I'm afraid I'm going to bomb tomorrow. That'll get me arrested in Florida on Alligator Alley.
Yeah, you could close down 20 miles of Alligator Alley in a hurry. What about when there are Arab Americans in your audience? Are Taliban jokes funny? Are burqa jokes funny?
Well, yes. In fact, I'm this weekend or next weekend I'll be doing a American Muslim Professional Association, 500 Indians, Pakistanis, and Arabs who will be hearing this type of humor really for the first time, but they're a younger generation. 2 weeks later, I'll be doing the United Holy Land Fund, which is not the one that's under investigation, but Arab Americans. So that, you know, those audiences, I think, are, you know, I got to be a little sensitive about some of these things. But the basic jokes are funny.
Are you changing your routine for a hall full of Arab Americans and Muslims?
You know, I've only been doing this 6 months. I don't think I can afford to change my routine. It took me 6 months to memorize 45 minutes of jokes. And I'm going to tell you what, that's a lot of jokes. It sounds easy. But 10 minutes could be like 40, 50 jokes.
Ray, if you got 40, 50 jokes, we want to hear more. Help us.
Well, you know, for example, you know, there's a positive side to being from the Middle East. For example, we get four wives. It says so in the Middle East Bible, the owner operating manual for 7-Eleven, chapter 5. Chapter 3 is about the 72 virgins. That guy, Richard Reed, what a dummy. It's not 72 virgins. Arabic, you read it from right to left, it's backwards. It's one virgin and she's 72 years old.
Okay.
And you know what? Listen, I get up on stage, I tell people, I'm an American. I was born in this country. Okay, I may have been kicked out twice, but still, I was born here. I served during the Vietnam War. My dad served during World War II. I'm going to do whatever they ask me to do to fight the terrorists. So if I go to the airport and I have to take my shoes off, my shirt off, my Speedo, I'll do that. I don't mind.
You're an all-American guy, Ray Hanania. You said something interesting. You said that these hundreds of professionals will be hearing this kind of humor for the first time. Can
right.
that really be true?
Well, you know what? There's a different kind of humor in the Middle East that, I mean, you don't see a lot of Arabs and Muslims at comedy clubs. You do see some. You don't see a lot. And the kind of humor that they're used to is more of a... how would you call it? It's more of a soap opera humor.
What does that mean?
It's not
schmaltz.
It's not political satire. You know, I for example, I make fun of, you know, the burqa in some of my jokes. I make fun
right.
of honor killings in some of my jokes. Not to say they're good, but to make the point that they're bad. But those are the kind of jokes you don't hear in the Arab world. What you do hear instead are silly jokes like. Yasser Arafat was walking, after he was elected president, he was walking down the beach in Gaza, and a new Palestinian police officer came up to him and said, hey, Arafat was smooching with his wife, and the police officer said, wait a minute, that's illegal, I'm going to write you a ticket. And then the police officer looked and recognized that it was Arafat and said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that, never mind. And the Arafat goes, no, I want you to write the ticket. Don't treat me any different. Treat me just like the rest of the people. So after arguing, the officer wrote the ticket, gave one to Arafat, gave one to his wife.
Yeah.
And Arafat looked at the ticket and said, wait a minute, mine's only for $25. Hers is for $300. And the police officer goes, well, it's your first offense. That is about as far as you could go in the past. And I think that was even actually crossing the line of what would have been an acceptable joke.
And that almost reminds me of more like our Jackie Gleason era humor.
Yeah, it was soap opera humor. It was silly jokes. Now the jokes are pointed. They're tied to current events. We're making fun of traditional things like stereotypes that we were afraid to touch before. I'm making fun of the fact that people think that Arabs are cab drivers or run 7-Elevens. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm making fun of the fact that our women, you know, Arab women are, you know, cover themselves up, or they wear the hijab, or they wear a burqa, which really is an outrageous, you know, infringement of woman's rights.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people in the Middle East who think that that's the way women should be dressed. Not a lot of them, but some.
Ray Hanania, I was in Chicago not so long ago, jumped in a cab. The cab driver was Afghan. We were talking about old days in Kabul. At that level, do you think the humor's also picking up? Is he going to think this is funny? He was an immigrant. Does the immigrant Arab understand the politicized American humor?
It's not about understanding the humor. Mm-hmm. It's really, and I know this sounds simplistic, but it's really about understanding the language. A new immigrant, I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, I had a nice conversation
Americans
with him.
I don't understand the language when I'm up on stage, but they need to understand three things about comedy for a comedy to work. One, that it's a joke. Two, they need to identify what you're talking about. And three, they need to recognize the punchline. Now, if someone in the audience can't understand what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. they're going to miss the joke. They won't catch
tough.
The punchline.
Ray Hanania, we were reading in April in Newsweek magazine about the plethora of new Arab-American and American-Muslim comics who are out there.
Right.
And we saw this. We saw that you had just landed a spot at Zany's,
correct.
Chicago's biggest club.
Right.
That
was after only doing 7 shows.
And congratulations. I mean, great. They reached out. They grabbed you.
And then 7 more shows later, I got kicked off. So what are you going to do?
Well, tell us about that. You were supposed to be billed with Jackie Mason.
Well,
the show was canceled because why?
Well, actually, I was billed to perform there before Jackie Mason,
yep.
3 months before the show. Then about 6 weeks before the show, they called and they said, well, they're going to add Jackie Mason to the lineup. I said that would be great. I had no problem with it. But
Jackie Mason, of course, does a big Jewish stick.
Right. And they said, listen, he does Jewish humor. We want to make sure it's okay with him, so you can't announce it,
mm-hmm.
you know, until we get his approval. And a week before the show, I get a call from the manager. And believe me, this is all innocent enough the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, great news. You're going to be able to, they approved you. You'll be able to open. They know you're Arab. It's no problem. I go, oh, great, cool. The day before the show, I called. I said, well, how do I introduce him? They said, well, he doesn't like long-winded introductions. He just wants to call the 2-time Emmy and Tony Award winner,
all right.
Jackie Mason. I said, great. The next day, they call me up. They go, oh, we got bad news. I go, what? They go, well, we got a guy who was complaining about you, and Jackie Mason's people are now all upset, and they just said that they didn't want you to open. And I said, well, why? I said, can I call the guy?
Yeah.
They said, no, it's, you know, they just don't think having an Arab or Palestinian open is going to be a good thing. And I said, oh, geez. I said, I feel bad. I said, it could be good. I said, let me talk to them. They said, no. So meanwhile, I had 2 reporters who were scheduled to cover my Wednesday performances.
Right.
That they didn't just arrange through me. They arranged through the club.
Mm-hmm.
Because the club, remember, they wanted the publicity. That's the whole
sure.
reason why an Arab is getting invited after only 7 shows to perform on a
mm-hmm,
big stage like
mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to call them and cancel. And, of course, listen, I'm a journalist. When you tell me that you were canceled because you were Arab,
there's
and that was the excuse,
mm-hmm.
I tried to tell the club that. I said, give me a better excuse. They said, that's it. We don't have one.
They weren't that quick on their feet.
No, well, I'll tell you what, when they were called, everybody was quick to say, yeah, that's the reason. Of course, it took about 2 days to change it.
Ray Hanania, stand by. We want to hear a lot more. We want to get back to your joke line. It's a good one. We're talking tonight with Middle Eastern American, Muslim American comedians about laughing through tough times. Is humor the way to build the bridge between cultures, between Americans? How much are you ready to laugh about? And what's sacred here and what's not? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with Ray Hanania. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Middle Eastern American, Muslim American comedians about laughing through tough times. We've been talking with Ray Hanania. He's a Palestinian-American columnist, Chicagoan, and author, turned to stand-up comedy after 9/11 to heal and to educate. And you heard the humor, and it gets you. It gets right to you. Can you hear these ethnically Middle Eastern and Muslim comics writing comedy into the American family in the tradition of Alan King, of Richard Pryor, Margaret Cho, of John Leguizamo? Do you hear the same thing happening here? Why does comedy reveal shared humanity? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ray Hanania, stand by if you would. I want to welcome another comedian into our midst tonight. Maz Jobrani is a Los Angeles-based Iranian-American. He's a Muslim actor, stand-up comedian, and he's on right now. Maz Jobrani, good evening and welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're great. It's great to have you with us. So what's shaking? What's working? What's getting the laughs in California, Maz?
What's getting the laughs in California? I guess all kinds of humor. I mean, what's coming from my ethnicity, just making fun of the situation that we're in. You know, I talk about how right now it's not a good time to be from the Middle East and how the media covers us biased. And when I watch the media, this is what I see. I see, good evening, this is CNN. Iranians suck. Back to you, Bob. And that's the kind of report. That's how I see it. I also say, you know, I got friends that are embarrassed to be from the Middle East, so now they're all Italian and named Tony. And you know, you start off like that whenever I do material, and usually the crowd is with me. And then from there, we just run the gamut. You know, like Ray was saying earlier, a lot of the stuff is topical. Just recently, there was those three Middle Eastern guys who were going from St. Louis to Florida.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the misunderstandings was that I saw in the news that one of the guys was saying that they were talking about bringing a car down to Florida, and the lady heard down and thought they're bringing something else down, meaning like a building. And I said, it's so tough, I can't even use the word down anymore. You know, so that's just a recent thing. Like, you know, every day there's something in the press, man.
Maz Jobrani, you've been doing stand-up comedy for several years, well before 9/11 last year. How has that event changed your routine as a, not Arab, but in this case, Iranian or Persian American, but call it what you will, how's it changed your approach?
The main thing that happened was, basically right after 9/11, everyone was just devastated, and I was devastated, and I thought I could never be funny again. And, you know, I've grown up in this country. I've been here since I was six, so I've always been very Americanized, and I would always touch on my ethnicity, too. And what happened was, at first, I was afraid to talk about my ethnicity, and I had a show I was supposed to do that Saturday after the Tuesday, and I wanted to cancel on it, but the gentleman who'd hired me to do the show asked me to come out and do it because he said that the people need to hear what's going on, and he also said that one of the ladies, actually the lady whose husband was sponsoring the show, she was Turkish,
yeah.
And he said that would be helpful to her. At first I was afraid to even mention being from the Middle East, but I found myself a lot of times indicating, I said, look, I'm an American citizen, I've grown up in America, but I was born in Iran. And then it was quiet, quiet, mm-hmm. quiet. And I said, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. and then we'd go on from there.
Take us deeper into your routine. We want to get a sense for how you're working the American psyche right now on the humor front. Take us on in.
Once I've got that going, I talk about, you know, how the people from the guys who hijacked those planes obviously affected everybody. They affected me. They affected everybody. But I say the group that was not talked about that they affected are high school kids, because those 19 guys' names that hijacked the planes, their names are so hard to pronounce that in the future history tests are going to suck. Alpha Keek Fakook, Alpha Koku Fikiki, I'll forget it, you know, I'll take the F. For furthermore, I talk about, you know, this thing that's going on right now with Iran and Iraq, and I'm sorry, with the Iraq war. You know, Bush wanted to go to Iraq, and I said, you know, I'm a fan of peace, and especially being from Iran, because I think that he might be able to, he might confuse the countries and bomb the wrong country.
It's only one letter difference.
Yeah, they sound alike, you know. And I said, if I were Iranian, I'd be gathering my people up right now to change the name of the country. You know, I said, come around, we need to change the name of the country. You know, Hot Sand Land, no, that's not a good name. You know. People walking around in turbans, no, not a good name. Brooklyn? Okay, that might work. We go with Brooklyn. Stuff like that,
We got it. We got it. Maj Jobrani, Ray Hanania, stand by. We've got callers who want to join this conversation. I want to invite them in. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Jay's on the line. Welcome, Jay. You're on the air.
Good evening, Tom.
Good evening.
Terrific show. I couldn't believe it. You have sense of humor, Tom. This is great.
Oh, come on.
It's for time. You know, I'm Iranian-American, and every now and then I've been asked to go give speeches. So usually I start with a funny joke. And one of my recent line has been that since I'm Iranian-American, obviously half of me hate America. The other half is I agree with it. you know, Tom, that's one of the things that I notice in terms of the cultural comedy. There are certain things you can do in America, certain things you can never do overseas.
So do you think, Jay, that comedians like Ray and Maz, and maybe one day yourself if you keep that up, have more latitude as Middle Easterners, as Muslims in America than they would abroad?
I would think it will be done in America very well than overseas. For example, that your early comedian mentioned the joke about Yasser Arafat and his wife walking around.
Yeah.
You can never do that in Middle East, because there is something about somebody's wife happens to be their honor. You can never joke. You know, often, you know, Middle Eastern people says that in America, one thing is important to American, their money. You can never ask how much money they make, but you can ask if their wives have any period. No big deal. But in Middle East, exactly the opposite. You can ask how much money they make. It will tell you immediately.
But never about the personal stuff. Jay, let me put that to Ray Hanania. Ray, Jay looks out across the land and says, you know, you're in a country uniquely situated for this kind of humor. And clearly, we mentioned at the top of the hour, there's a long tradition here. I wonder if you see yourself in it. Alan King, who helped break down doors for Jewish culture through humor. Richard Pryor did the same for African-American. Margaret Cho, some would say, doing it for Asian-Americans. Do you see yourself in that lineage?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting because Maj Jobrani is the Alan King of the Arab community, in a sense. He's been doing it 4 years, so that makes it an eternity in terms of Arab comedians. So it's a pleasure for me to be on the line with him, you know, because I've read some stuff about him and Ahmed and a couple of the other guys, and it's just nice that they had the courage to get up there and do this. But, yeah, this is a brand-new field. I mean, for example, a lot of these jokes are out there, and for the first time, people can tell them. A lot of these jokes have never been told by any comedians before. So in one sense, that's great. In another sense, you know, I have this web page, and I don't mean to plug it, but arabcomedian.com. It's not like I had to fight to get the web page. There are millions of them there.
The URL was not taken.
No, you know the rest of them are still open.
That means a lot of new territory being opened up here. You mentioned Ahmed. We quoted him at the very top of the hour. I had him on the show last fall. I mean, he's still throwing them out there. We read from him, you know, what's he say? He gets around to his first Osama joke. He says the only virgin he'll get in the afterlife is Janet Reno. I mean, there, talk about melding cultures. You've got Middle Eastern culture coming right into to the heart of American political land. Maj Jobrani, I want to ask you, because our caller Jay is also Iranian-American, what do you make of his first joke there?
It was very funny.
You scribbling that one?
What's that?
You scribbling that one down?
Yeah, I'm going to steal it and I'll take it to Letterman. Thanks a lot, Jay. I also want to say it's a pleasure to be on the phone with Ray, because I've seen what's been happening recently, and I support him, and like Ray was saying, we do have a show out here in Los Angeles that we do, which is actually called the Arabian Nights. That's one thing that actually happened too, was after September 11th, is that we didn't use that title for a while, just because, you know, you never know what's going to, you know, you don't want the wrong people coming to the show.
And this is down at the Comedy Store. I think it was organized by Mitzi Shore, Pauly Shore's mom.
Exactly. Mitzi Shore, Pauly Shore's mother, who is Jewish, wanted to bring her Middle Eastern comics together. She's done that with her black comedians or with her Latin comedians or female comedians. She wanted to do that with her Middle Eastern comedians, and she put together me and Ahmed Ahmed and Aaron Cater and Sam Tripoli.
And this is Arabian Nights with a K, as in Knights of the Round Table. And how's it going? Are you filling up the house?
Yeah, it's going great. You know, we did it. We go down to San Diego and we do shows. And we went down there recently, and this was after September 11th. And we had people coming up to us afterwards going, "You guys, thank you so much. I didn't think I could ever laugh at what the situation, but you've made me realize that I can." And I think one of the main things that happens, Tom, is that people realize that, you know, we're all American too, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why, you know, like what Ray was saying about the jokes that would work here and might not work there. You know, just like Ray was saying, I have my mother's friends who, you know, have grown up in Iran and came out here a lot later will come up to me and they'll say, "Tell that joke about the Rashti from the southeastern region who went over to the northeastern region and she wanted to get, you know," and I'm going, "Whoa, wait a minute. People don't know, you know, people aren't going to know what I'm talking about." And those jokes work there. The jokes that we talk about are things that we observe, the politics of it, the day-to-day of it. And, you know, we're inspired by comedians, American comedians.
Maze, I tried to buy tickets for your show, but, you know, the FBI bought them all out. Are there any days that are open?
Conspicuously, a lot of the audience members all wear shades.
You know, they got white shirts and, you know, long black ties and jackets, and they're all talking into their right hand. You wonder, what the heck is the audience doing?
Yeah.
We know it's California, but this many sunglasses are ridiculous. Maz Debrani, I know we've got to let you go, but thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been great to have you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, break a falafel.
Hey.
okay, break it up. I want to welcome into our conversation, Ray. Well, let me ask you first, Ray. Yeah. There's one thing that I heard there.
Yeah.
You know, and I just wonder what your take is on it. Maz is a very funny guy, and he'll quickly go off on, you know, he was riffing on Al Fakik and Fakuk and how hard it's going to be for. Where's the line here between kind of ugly old American towel head humor, jockey humor, and Al Fakik Fakuk? Is it all who says it? Is that the difference?
Well, it depends on who says it and how you said it. I mean, you know, I had no problem with anything that Jackie Mason said about me, but when he called me a raghead, it really kind of ticked me off. A raghead. I get all my towels from the Holiday Inn. You know, I didn't understand that.
So he actually went after you on stage?
No, I'm just joking. I'm trying to make the point that you can use the issue raghead in a certain context.
Right.
And because I'm Arab or Middle Eastern, I can get away with it.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody who was Irish, you know, got up on stage,
it's a lot more difficult.
You can talk about yourself in those terms.
Yeah.
You just can't talk about other people that way.
Yeah. Ray Hanania, you're great. Stand by. I want to welcome onto the show Azhar Usman. He's a Chicago-based Indian Muslim stand-up comedian. Good evening and welcome, Azhar Usman.
Good morning. Good evening. How's it going, guys?
Azhar,
how are you?
Azhar and I spent some time
in the Metropolitan Correctional Center together. That's where we met.
That's right.
Good to see you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Orange suit with the handcuffs?
Ray is such a big star now, he's hard enough to get on the phone. I got to talk to him over the radio. Damn.
Hey, you're right on there with him, though, Azhar. Azhar, you've got an interesting angle here because you are Muslim, you're American, you are Muslim, you are not Arab or even Middle Eastern by any geographic stretch.
And he looks like Mullah Omar.
is it true, Azhar?
That's right.
But where does that leave
you? What's your point, man? Therefore, I'm schizophrenic?
Well, possibly, but where does that leave you in this kind of post 9/11 thing? Are you sucked into the energy of all the talk about terror and 9/11 and this tension, ethnic tension that's underneath, or are you in a different category?
No, man, I'm still in the same category. In fact, I like to tell people, look, man, I'm an American Muslim, all right? I consider myself a very patriotic American Muslim, which means I'm willing to die for this country by blowing myself up. Okay? And I also want to say, you know, since I'm on the air, you know, just for the record, in case the FBI is in fact listening, I'm not a member of Al-Qaeda. I'm not a member of the Taliban. I just play one on TV.
If the FBI is listening, I'd like to let them know that if they need a witness against Azhar, I'm happy to testify.
So everybody's ready to go.
No, I'm just kidding. On a serious note, you're absolutely right. And I think part of the education, Tom, that has to come out of this is the fact that not all Arabs are Muslims. Not all Muslims are Arabs. In fact, only 18% of the entire Muslim world is actually in the Arab world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got Ray on the phone. He's an Arab, but he's actually a Christian. You had a moment ago, you know, a Persian gentleman. And I think that, you know, what I think needs to come out of this is that a part of what needs to come out of it is that we have these stereotypes and we like to lump people in a big category, but actually we're being a little bit disingenuous when we do that. There's more there than meets the eye oftentimes, and I hope that sometimes when people walk away from my show, they sort of get a flavor of that.
We're all learning a lot, and it's an ironic and in a way tragic of what it's taken to make that happen. Azhar Usman, keep your bag of tricks open here for us. Keep it coming. What else you got in there?
Well, this is funny to me. You asked about the terrorism and stuff. I mean, the terrorism is not funny, but what's funny about it is the fact that there's people immediately jump to conclusions. It's got to be the Arabs. I kept thinking back to Oklahoma City bombing, where the day they arrested Timothy McVeigh, I think the entire Muslim community in America felt like O.J. Simpson the day the verdict was announced. Told you I didn't do it, man. Told you I didn't do it. But seriously, it's like as soon as the bombing was over, this guy Steve Emerson, I'll go on the air saying this guy is scared of anything Muslim or Arab or having to do with Islam.
Steve Emerson's been on our show.
Emerson was on the scene after Oklahoma City bombing. He doesn't like to talk about this. And he was talking about, this bombing has clear Middle Eastern characteristics. What the hell does that mean? Like, there was belly dancing music playing in the background, I don't know, the bombing was scheduled for 3, and they showed up at 6:30, 3.5 hours late. That's a Middle Eastern characteristic, Little chunks of flaming hummus came out of the wreckage, I don't know, Seriously, when the bombs were supposed to go kaboom, they went kaboom!
Azhar, do you take it on down into the subcontinent? Do you bring India into your thing, or are you strictly riding Muslim in the Middle East?
I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. It's funny, because there's so many Muslims in America, and Americans are surprised to hear about it sometimes. I've got an uncle who likes to brag about it. He's always talking about, we have 500,000 Muslims in Chicago. Can you think it? We are having 7 million Muslims in the whole America. Just you imagine. We are having 1.2 million Muslims in the whole entire world, as if he has something to do with it.
He's got pride of authorship going on there.
The interesting thing, Tom, is that he's telling his coworkers as if they're impressed. He's like, Bob, can you imagine 7 million Muslims in America?
It's a beautiful thing.
He thinks Bob is impressed. Bob is scared. All right?
Ray Hennany, help me out here. Is there room in Chicago for both of you guys?
Yeah, actually there is. And you know what? There are a couple other people. Khalil Farouki's from Chicago.
We've got
a guy named Camille who is here in Chicago. I can't even think of all of them. And I'm telling you what, they're coming out of the woodwork. Now, I don't know if this comedy thing was an FBI plot just to find out who they haven't nailed yet.
Checks in the mail, baby.
Yeah, but it is easier to stand up and identify yourself as an Arab or Muslim comedian today, and audiences want to hear you.
That's right. That's right. I couldn't agree with Ray more. In fact, Ray, I'm sure you made a shameless plug for our show coming up in Chicago.
Yeah, I haven't gotten
kebab.
That shameless yet, but I'm trying.
That's right. Can't we all just see kebab, baby?
Yeah, we're doing an all-Taliban review.
Are you serious? Tell us when. We have a lot of Wisconsin listeners.
Yeah. We don't want any cheddar heads. That's where Jackie Mason was from, some kibbutz called Sheboygan.
Oh, man. Please.
Oh, we got
to pick on him. He's going to want equal time. Next thing you know, he's going to say he's Arab, too, just to get some laughs.
Hey, lay off the cheddar heads. They're our friends. Hang on, Azhar. Hang on, Ray Hennany. We're talking tonight with Middle Eastern, American, Muslim, American comedians about laughing through tough times. And can you hear these ethnically Middle Eastern and Muslim comics writing comedy into the American family in the tradition of Alan King, Richard Pryor, Margaret Cho, John Leguizamo? Is it the same thing? Why does comedy reveal shared humanity? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking and laughing tonight with Middle Eastern American, with Muslim American comedians laughing through tough times. You can join us as well. Why do we laugh when we say Taliban, Burqa, Osama? Is it prejudice or is it the beginning? Can it be the beginning of understanding? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined tonight and happy to be so by Ray Hennany. He's Palestinian-American columnist and author turned stand-up comedian since 9/11 last year. And also from Chicago by Azhar Usman, Indian-Muslim-American, standing up, making us laugh. It's great to have you both here tonight.
Between us, we have like 90% of the 7-Elevens covered. So.
Yeah.
Don't forget Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, and Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah.
Now, I've got to ask you this. Ray, you're Christian. Azhar, you're Muslim. And I've read you quoted, Azhar, saying that the Quran or Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, said to smile and laugh often, but there are limits to what you can take to the stage as an Islamic American comic. Are there boundaries that you have that Ray doesn't?
Well, I don't know that any of the stuff that I sort of like to model my material after, any of the limits that I like to impose aren't some of the same limits that Ray does. I've seen Ray's act. He doesn't curse, for example. He doesn't, you know, go down to the blue material level. That's the kind of stuff that I think, you know, really, just morally speaking, a lot of comics have stayed away from in the past. And also, the more intelligent comics, frankly, that I've noticed have become huge stars and actually have gone on to sort of become cultural icons, people like Cosby and Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't find that they like to go down and stoop down to, you know, the same old beer and fart and burp jokes,
mm-hmm.
and the pot and the sex and what have you, but that you see a lot of times in the comedy club atmosphere. So I pride myself on the fact that I actually challenge myself to write material within constraints that are not just informed by religious teachings, but also are informed by sort of the model that's been laid forth by great comedians before me.
Let's let our callers in here. Rima's on the line. Hi, Rima. You're on the air.
Hi, you guys. You're really funny. You're cracking me up. I had, I guess, a couple questions, but I'll start with the more important one. Basically, like, you guys are doing sort of cultural or ethnic humor, and I guess there's two sides to that. There's the side where you're kind of getting up there and making fun of yourself, and there's the side where you're making fun of the American culture that sort of can sometimes misperceive you. And I'm wondering...
We heard both.
Huh?
Yes, we heard both.
Right. So I guess I was wondering, does one kind go over better with an audience than the other?
Oh, it's a great question, Rima. And let us take just that. And how about it, Rehan and Nia, making fun of yourself, making fun of America's foibles? Which
well,
gets the bigger
you know,
they're, the
fall? they both actually go over pretty well the same. And I'll tell you why. Because remember, the key to a joke is the familiarity of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
When I make fun of myself, I'm talking about my cultural traits. A lot of people really, you'd be surprised how few people really identify with all the stereotypes that we think exist around us, because I run into them every day. Doesn't mean that every American sees the same stereotypes and or they understand the same things that I'm talking about. And on the other hand, making fun of American culture as it applies to Arabs, you know, my experience in the American culture, those things identify with the audience more. I've never seen anybody offended yet about any of the jokes. No American has gotten up and tackled me to the ground and
mm-hmm.
called the FBI, so... Of course, I've only been doing it 6 months. It still could happen.
Azar Usman, how about you?
I think the answer is probably it depends on the audience. I mean, some of the material is going to go over. I mean, I've been playing actually to a lot of ethnic crowds that are actually Muslim audiences. A lot of them are American Muslims, you know, college students that were born and raised in America as Muslims. And I find with them, a lot of the self-deprecating stuff actually goes over better than, you know, just poking fun at America's foibles, if you will.
Yeah,
and I think that just has to do with the fact that, you know, they really don't have an outlet to laugh about this stuff. And, you know, I created a character I like to call Sheikh Abdul the Radical Imam.
Give him to us.
Sheikh Abdul, I mean, this guy, you know, he's a caricature of the fact that there's a lot of these guys talking, spouting this rhetoric, and they don't realize how ironic they sound. For example, they get up in the mosque talking about, this week we're going to talk about taking this religion, Islam, we're going to take over the whole world, okay, and we're going to show everybody in the world how to live, but I got to start off by making an announcement. There are 6 cars double parked in the parking lot, and if you don't move your car, we're going to tow it immediately, even though we've been threatening for the last 17 years, we never tow a single car. You know, I mean, the Muslim crowds are
just the grand
it.
And the gritty.
The Muslim crowds are just loving it, because these guys are talking about this ridiculous, we're going to take over the world and show people how to live.
Ray, keep it going. You, we've only got a couple minutes left. Let us hear what you've got. Your wife is Jewish, and you've got jokes that go straight off of that.
Right. I've been married 3 times. I mean, my first wife was American, the best $10,000 I ever spent.
Oh, green card.
I got my citizenship, and she left as soon as the check cleared. Like most American women, she just took my money and left. My second wife was Arab. And I'll tell you what, I remember how beautiful she looked the very first time I was introduced to her up at the altar.
Yeah?
She looked stunning in that white burlap burqa, the gleam in her eye twinkling through the mesh on her face.
Oh.
She had me at hello.
Oh, okay.
It was the only word she knew besides immigration. And now my current wife is Jewish. My third wife is Jewish, and that's the truth. I mean, but the thing was, she didn't know I was Palestinian, and I didn't know she was Jewish. We met in a little town called Cicero, Illinois, and in Cicero, she thought I was a Mexican who hated Mexican food, who couldn't speak Spanish, and I just thought she was a cheap Italian.
Oh, God. Azar Usman, take us. We've only got a minute. Give us some more here.
Well, you know, I was talking a moment ago about how these guys get on TV talking about, you know, this bombing had clear Middle Eastern characteristics.
Yeah.
You know, the other one that really gets me all the time is Islam is a religion of violence. That's right. Islam was spread by the sword. You know, what the heck does that mean, man? Like, you know, maybe if Islam was the name of a cheese spread, you know, yeah, I like a bagel, please. You like it toasted? Yeah, would you like some Islam?
Oh, we're getting
spread
on
it with
thick.
The sword, baby.
I've only got 30s. I got to say goodnight to you guys, but it's been great to have you.
Hey, you've been a great audience, but I only got 4 seats in my cab, so I can't take you hostage.
It's okay. Ray Hanania, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Ray Hanania is a Palestinian-American columnist and author. And Azhar Usman, thank you for being with us. Azhar Usman is Chicago-based, Indian-Muslim, stand-up comedian. Ray, Azhar, Make them laugh. Thanks for being with us. For more information on Arab and Muslim comedians or to continue the conversation, go to our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Have a great weekend. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Would the world be wise to leave the present situation undisturbed to say that despite 14 separate United Nations demands on this issue, all of which Saddam is in breach of, we should do nothing? I do not believe that would be a responsible course to follow.
Since we began after September 11th, we do have solid evidence of the presence in Iraq of Al-Qaeda members, including some that have been in Baghdad. We have what we consider to be a very reliable reporting of senior-level contacts going back a decade, and of possible chemical and biological agent training.
The Senate is more interested in special interests in Washington and not interested in the security of the American people. I will not accept a Department of Homeland Security that does not allow this president and future presidents to better keep the American people secure.
Not interested in the security of the American people? You tell Senator Inouye he's not interested in the security of the American people. You tell those who fought in Vietnam and in World War II they're not interested in the security of the American people. That is outrageous.
I am deeply concerned that the course of action that we are presently embarking upon with respect to Iraq has the potential to seriously damage our ability to win the war against terrorism and to weaken our ability to lead the world in this new century.
The administration has not made a convincing case that we face such an imminent threat to our national security that a unilateral, preemptive American strike and an immediate war are necessary.
Denn wie hat einer, das ist schon ein bisschen länger her, natürlich mal gesagt, einer meiner Vorgänger.
A majority is a majority, Schroeder said, paraphrasing the famous quote by Germany's first post-war leader, Konrad Adenauer. And we'll take it, he added.
Right now, at the request of the American ambassador of the Ivory Coast of Côte d'Ivoire, the U.S. European Command is moving forces to the region, and they're doing this for a purpose to be in a closer position to be able to provide for the safety of American citizens.
After falling for 4 consecutive years, the poverty rate rose from 11.3% in 2000 to 11.7% in 2001. The number of poor increased also by 1.3 million people to 32.9 million poor in 2001.
And there's a week. Tony Blair says it's time for action against Saddam Hussein. Donald Rumsfeld says he has intelligence that shows links exist between Iraq and al-Qaeda. President Bush goes after the democratically controlled Senate for not being supportive enough on the security front. Democratic Party dissent breaks out. We heard there from Tom Daschle, from Al Gore, and from Senator Ted Kennedy. Gerhard Schroeder wins re-election in a razor-tight race for Germany's chancellor. U.S. and French special forces rescue about 200 Americans caught in an uprising in the Ivory Coast, and new figures out show there are more poor in the United States than any time since 1993. Jack, there it is, and most of it is still wrapped around Iraq, war with Iraq, and national security.
Yes, there's really been a three-front campaign by the administration this week with respect to Congress, with respect to the U.N., and with respect to the Democrats. With Congress, the debate is whether the Congress will get a suitably limited resolution. By that, one that will have no ambiguity such that the president could expand the war to another state. And it'll have some fig leaf in there about the need to consult with Congress, keeping the form of that alive.
But these are nips and tucks. The fundamental thrust of this resolution seems to be pretty much as President Bush would like it and very much on track.
Yes, I don't think there's any question about it, and that's partly because of his offensive against the Democrats. I mean, the president very successfully this week surfaced the unacknowledged subterranean text of the campaign that the Republicans are the people who should handle national security. The Democrats don't, quote, care about it, he said, the security of the American people. There was an immediate row about that, but in a way the Democrats then went on to confirm it with Al Gore and Ted Kennedy criticizing the war, much to the consternation of the political consultants who just want them to
Though if you listen closely, Ted Kennedy did not back that far away. He said the president has not made the case for unilateral, preemptive, and immediate war. That leaves open a lot of possibility for war.
It certainly does. There are no out and out, no war on for any reason dubs in the Congress, if there are any at all. I guess there are a few in the House. Meanwhile, it all depends on the UN. I mean, Britain and the United States are trying to get together this resolution, and which apparently says that Iraq has got 2 months, will have 2 months to make inspections work or to show a willingness to make them work and to make progress on other fronts.
And President Bush listed many other fronts when he spoke before the UN. Colin Powell sounds like he's doing a lot of heavy lifting with members of the UN Security Council, but we haven't seen the puff of white smoke yet, the sign that he's got all the ducks in a row.
No, although I heard from some reporter today who'd had dinner with the Russian ambassador. This was on another program. He said the Russians are pretty much they're going to abstain. They'd let it. So the problem now seems to be the French, and I can't imagine a device that wouldn't bring them aboard. So it looks like that could well be wired up.
It seems like a lot is wired up here, though. You can feel the urgency of the Bush administration to keep moving forward and not lose momentum as dissent breaks out here and there.
Yes, and they're expanding their war, their case. They had been just talking about the weapons of mass destruction. Now they're back to the al-Qaeda connection, asserting that there is one with Iraq. But as Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska said, where is the evidence? Produce it. Show it. They have not done that. They just asserted there is evidence there. And polls show that most people think there is a connection, even though experts say they can't see any evidence.
But evidence has been a long time coming, may not show up until if and when we go in, and maybe not then, who knows. Jack, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us this week.
And you too. Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skoog. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Have a great weekend.
This is WBUR. We're